Families for Addiction Recovery, or FAR, is a grassroots Canadian registered charity dedicated to supporting families and protecting persons, particularly teens and young adults struggling with a substance use disorder. And funding is always an issue, and there's a lot of things that they want done that haven't been yet. So we're so pleased to be joined on the air by the Executive Director of Families for Addiction Recovery. Angie Hamilton joins us. Angie, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Let's first of all talk a little bit about FAR and kind of encapsulate a little bit more of exactly what it is that your group does.
Okay. Well, actually, you gave a very good overview yourself. We like to support families who are affected by addiction, and one of the things we do is we have a parent-to-parent support program that's available over the phone. And we have trained parents who have lived experience as a parent of a child with substance use disorder or addiction. And we provide help to any Canadian parent across Canada, as I said, over the phone for a period of time. And the other thing that we have is an excellent website, which is very resource-rich and has tips for parents and other loved ones on how to communicate and interact with your loved one who may be in active addiction, and, you know, talks about what you can do to support yourself and has a lot of good information about what addiction is and is not. Other things that we do, we advocate to the governments, to medical associations, and the general public, really, and say what we think needs to happen in order to help people struggling with addiction and their families.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed and known for the last little while hosting mental health shows and health and wellness shows here on CHML is it seems that a lot of people or most people get involved in a cause because of a personal story or they're very passionate about something. And I know that there is something that tugs with you on a personal tie-in with addiction and a family member, correct?
Absolutely. Well, that's one of the reasons that FAR was founded. So we, as many of the people involved in the creation of FAR, we have a child who has struggled with addiction from a very early age, actually from the age of 14. And it's what we went through in order to help our son that convinced us we really needed an organization like FAR because the needs of our families were not being met. So I'm happy to report right now that my son is 23 years old and he's actually today 2.5 years in recovery.
Excellent. When he started at 14, were the warning signs there or did something just kind of jump out at you to say, you know what, he has a problem? Or did he come to you and say, at some point, I've got a problem?
Oh, no. He did not come and tell us he had a problem. So I would say my experience, and I've attended a lot of support groups, is the kids almost always, if they have a substance use disorder at an early age, there's something else going on. So they often have other mental health conditions or they could have incurred trauma. In my son's case, there were other mental health conditions, so he had undiagnosed anxiety, depression, and ADHD, and he was quite oppositional. So we knew, you know, that he had those issues going on. We didn't know, you know, that it was clinical, but we were aware. And, you know, like a lot of the families struggling, their kids, you know, have behaviors that are problematic that's the result of other mental health conditions and then with the substance use. And in our case, we did know that he started to use substances pretty much right away. And then what we found, which was really annoying, is that we were quite powerless to do anything about it. You know, because initially, you know, kids, they're kids. They often think when they try a substance and it's fun or it, you know, alleviates pain and helps them deal with other mental health conditions or kind of self-medicating, they think they've found the answer to their problems. And it's not until often many years later that they realize what they thought was the answer may have become the biggest problem for them.
In your experience, is teen, preteen, adolescents, what have you, whatever age group. Is anxiety and depression and things like that a bigger issue for kids these days than maybe when you were growing up? And I'm a lot older than you, so it just seems more prevalent these days. Is that a fair statement?
I actually don't know the answer to that. I think it's very prevalent. Whether it's more prevalent than before, I'm not sure. I think what there is easier access to drugs today than there were in the olden days or the good old days or whatever, which makes it much more problematic.
Now, one of the things that I know that you have been proactive about, Pine River Institute is Ontario's only long-term residential treatment program for kids 13 to 19. And I think people may be surprised by that when we say it's the only one in the province. And the wait list is 12 months for girls, 15 months for boys. I guess the obvious question is why? Why is the wait time so long?
Well, that's a really good question. And, you know, the provincial government has acknowledged that youth addictions is an area where there's a service gap, and they have said it's a priority area for them. And notwithstanding that, Pine River has had their expansion plan for an extra 26 beds and 8 transition beds in with their, you know, LIN, their local health integration network, since 2014, and it's never gotten a stamp of approval. And for families, you know, we certainly have an impression, you know, money is going to harm reduction, which is very important, keeps people alive, but we're certainly feeling and have the impression that the government right now has a policy of anything but beds, because they're perceived to be very expensive compared to everything else. But the truth of the matter is, you know, if you don't fund the beds, these kids are expensive one way or the other. So it could be that they end up, you know, in children's aid societies. They rotate through, you know, the emergency rooms, and certainly they're involved. You know, if you're 13, 14, 15, and you're struggling with addiction, you often are involved in criminal activities in order to support your addiction. It's not because their morals and values are any different than anybody else's, but if you look at the definition of addiction, it's, you know, compulsive use of drugs or alcohol in spite of, you know, adverse consequences. So, you know, punishment isn't going to work to stop that.
And it's interesting, and maybe it gives people an indication of how problematic this is. Families, I understand, when there's 33 beds at Pine River, 29 are provincially funded, so families have to pay $650 a month. So it would, if you're one of those four families that has to pay money, whereas the other 29 don't, how fair or unfair is that? Rhetorical question,
well,
obviously.
Exactly. And so, I mean, and that's the case. I mean, we have a lot of parents, and myself included, we ended up taking our children to the States for treatment. So often people with, you know, with the financial ability will either jump the queue in Canada for treatment or go to the States for treatment. And, you know, when a child is in, we have teenagers using illicit substances, and the market today is toxic, and the federal government is not regulating that toxic market. So the next use by these teenagers could be fatal. So, for heaven's sakes, when they need treatment, we really need treatment on demand, and we need it for everybody.
I understand that you did have a meeting with Premier Kathleen Wynne. Fair to say that it wasn't quite as substantive as maybe you would have liked?
Well, you know, you never know. Uh-huh. You never know until something does or doesn't happen. Right now, nothing's happened yet, so we continue to be hopeful. We did tell the Premier, and I think she knows, that we need treatment beds for youth on an urgent basis. The Ministry of Health's own leadership council, which they set up, has told them as much, that this is an urgent need. So, you know, the other thing that we talked about, was the need to put alcohol medication. So there is medication available for alcohol use disorder. We need to put that on the formulary so it's free for people. We have that right now with respect to the meds for opioids. They sort of expedited that, but they haven't done that yet with respect to alcohol. And the other thing that we really need is we need universal health care when it comes to mental health and addiction. We really don't have that. So there's a chronic underfunding. CAMH has estimated it's about $1.5 billion annually in Ontario, that there's a shortfall. Addictions and mental health represents about 10 to 11% of the burden of diseases, but it receives about 7% of the healthcare funding. So, you know, we need a major investment in this. And the other thing we need to do is educate our doctors as well, because it sounds crazy, the doctors don't learn, actually, about addiction in medical school. There's very, very little education. So we really need to bring them up to speed, because they know how to prescribe opioids and, of course, may have overprescribed opioids, but most of them do not know how to prescribe the medications for people who have opioid use disorder to get them off of the opioids.
Our guest is the Executive Director of Families for Addiction Recovery, Angie Hamilton. When you break down those numbers, Angie, that's staggering when you say that CAMH says $1.5 billion. That's the deficit when it comes to adequate funding. That's only 7% of health dollars going to mental health. And all this time, I thought we were making progress, and clearly, in many ways, we're not. Very frustrating, I know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about what is up and coming, and that is the cannabis sales that the government is regulating, and it'll be out, and in my opinion, the major elephant in the room. What would FAR like to see as far as cannabis sales and services and dealing with an issue that can be, for a lot of people, very problematic?
Well, so it may surprise you to find out that we actually are in favor of the government regulating cannabis sales. We think it's the right way to go, not only with respect to cannabis, but perhaps other substances as well, because people use illicit substances, and the only way to protect them is to control and regulate the sale of those substances. And as long as it's illegal, they can't do that. That said, we are very concerned because right now we don't, the kids are waiting so long for treatment, and I can tell you that the main thing that they're addicted to is cannabis. It's not as bad certainly as being addicted to heroin. You don't have to usually worry if somebody's addicted to cannabis that they're going to die from it. But it can represent life years lost, because the kids, you know, their life is basically stagnant. So we would like to see, and we asked for all of the, profits from cannabis sales to go to treatment, to help deal with this huge deficit in funding for addiction and mental health. So we would like to see that. One of the other things we would have liked to see, because we believe it's an evidence-based policy, is for sales to be restricted to those 21 and over. There's lots of evidence that is good to prevent a lot of harms that come with using alcohol, cigarettes, cannabis, etc.
There is apparently a day-long summit coming up in May to talk about some issues going forward. Tell us about that.
I'm really excited about that, actually. The summit is being held by MP Rob Oliphant. We asked him to do something, and he's doing a summit on how to protect addicted youth who are not seeking treatment, because there are, actually, it's kind of like the rule of thumb, honestly, that a lot of kids who are struggling with addiction, they aren't seeking treatment, and there are different reasons for that, and we don't think it's really acceptable to sort of say, they don't want treatment, we have to wait for them to hit rock bottom, and there's nothing we can do until they want treatment. So we're very excited that we're having this summit, and we're going to be getting stakeholders from across Canada to look at this issue and hopefully come up with an action plan for the federal government with respect to this very important issue.
And where will that summit be held?
It's going to be in Toronto.
Okay. So just before we wrap up, Angie, if there's people listening to this and there's parents or family members and there is somebody out there who is struggling, a young adult or a teen with substance use disorder, and you've talked about your personal story, you've gone through it, what's the advice you would have for them?
For the families and for the people struggling, never give up. The recovery is absolutely possible. It's actually more likely that people recover than not. And there is hope. And they can go to our website, www.farcanada.org, for more information.
All right. Repeat that website one more time, just in case people wanted to reach for a pen.
Sure. www.farcanada.org.
Angie Hamilton, the Executive Director of Families for Addiction Recovery. I know that you've taken your battle to Queen's Park. I know it will continue for the next foreseeable future as you continue this battle for funding and, at the same time, awareness. Thank you for the time. Continued good luck and congratulations on what you've done so far.
Thanks so much, Ted. Appreciate it.
This is the Health and Wellness Show, brought to you by Barry's Jewelers. Jewelry, we make it personal.